Did you know that the 4th of July is on a Thursday this year? That's going to be a full weekend of fun out on the deck, 4 days. But if your deck isn't what it used to be and you aren't using it for great family gatherings, you need to call my friends at All Weather Decks. All Weather Decks is a 24-time winner of the Angie Super Service Award. And they probably help one of your neighbors. Click on the map link at allweatherdecks.net. Call All Weather Decks today at 913-206-1974 or go to allweatherdecks.net and mention you heard it on 810. Call now and relax.
Welcome back to the Border Patrol on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Stephen St. John and Nate Bucati with Jake Gutierrez. Thanks for listening to us on this Friday, March 9th, 2018. Let's talk more college basketball with our college basketball insider from the Sporting News, Mike DeCourcy. Follow him on Twitter, TSN Mike is his handle. Hello, Mike. How are you?
I'm well, guys. How are you?
Doing okay. Doing pretty well. A lot of stuff to talk about. So let's get to it. Mizzou loses to Georgia 62-60 yesterday. And we finally see the return of Michael Porter Jr. But Mizzou was very sloppy. Jonte Porter really was the only guy that had a good game yesterday. And they lose to the 12 seed. And now they will await their fate on Selection Sunday. Most of the bracketologies I've seen still have them as an 8 seed, but I'd just like to get your reaction to Mizzou's loss and the return of Michael Porter Jr.
Yeah, you know, I mean, obviously there's some risk to bringing him back in that circumstance, but the fact that he did play is indicative that all the suspicion that he was ducking or whatever prior to that was untrue. I mean, because there was no reason to play yesterday if he was trying to hide from competition or hide from the scouts or whatever the people suspected, then he wouldn't have played yesterday. So that means yesterday was the day he was ready to play. And while I'm not just necessarily endorsing 5-for-17 on your first night out, he did do some good things. I don't think it's fair to point any disruption other than that, 12 missed shots is a lot to that, because I mean you had guys fouling out of the game, your top two big guys fouled out of the game. That's 10 fouls in 27 minutes. I mean, you can't blame that on Michael. Or the disruption or whatever. I mean, it just didn't play well. So they get a chance to regroup and get a little bit more time with him on the floor before they have to play in the NCAAs. And again, as I said before, I think making the tournament was the goal this year. Once Michael was out and you didn't get a chance to develop with him. And then just take your chance. And I think your chance is better with him in the rotation than without.
So, Mike, this is not me blaming Michael Porter Jr. in any way, shape, or form for the fact that they lost yesterday. But we spent a lot of time on yesterday's show, and I with some former college basketball players, and I raised the question that for me, one of the most difficult things in basketball for anyone who's played it at any level is defining in your own head what a good shot is, and that can depend greatly on who your teammates on the floor are, because without Michael Porter Jr., some of the shots that Cassius Robertson has taken this year were with the shots that Missouri needed. But with Michael Porter Jr. On the floor, that might not be the shot they need right now. They might be able to get a better look with Michael Porter Jr. or something like that. And I just wonder if a guy like Jordan Barnett, if Cassius Robertson, they had bad shooting nights yesterday. Is there any correlation to them just maybe questioning where their shots are supposed to come with a guy who's considered to be one of the best offensive talents in the game all of a sudden on the floor with them at the same time?
I'll be honest with you. I don't think there's anything subjective about a good shot other than what happens in the last 0 to 7 seconds in a shot clock. I mean, otherwise, for the most part, unless you're Trae Young or Steph Curry, a quality shot is a quality shot. You run whatever you run, whether it's a set play or pick and roll or whatever, and then an unguarded shot, with good floor balance and good spacing is a good shot. And obviously, you know, you're gonna run different things for different people. But guys who have green lights, you know, if you run a high pick and roll, and you know, and the defense reacts to that, and you're able to get past the initial line, and you're able to get to the foul line, and the corner defender sags down, and there's a wide open shooter in the corner, whether it's Barnett or Robertson or whomever. I mean, that's a good shot, right? I mean, that whoever that player is, Michael or whoever, that corner shot, once you've beaten the initial line and you've drawn the defense down, that's a good shot. I don't know. You know, I don't necessarily believe that there's a great subjectivity to that. We all know what a good shot looks like, and we all know when you say to yourself, "Well, whoa, that's a bad one," and then maybe it goes in, and you say, and I've always said the only excuse for that shot is it has to go in. I think those guys, I don't think that should change for them much. Now, how much, you know, I don't think that they should look. The one thing that I would say is, you know, and not that I've got, you know, I still have a 0-0 record as a coach on the Division I level.
Undefeated.
You know, the one thing I would always say is, you know, don't look for Michael right now because he's new. Don't look for him to be extraordinary. Don't look for him in any other way than you would ordinarily look for whoever is in that spot. I mean, you can't do that unless it's late in the clock. And then, you know, if you think that he can bail you out, fine. But otherwise, when you're running the first 20 to 25 seconds of your offense, you have to play it the same way. It just, you might have other options now that weren't available two games ago.
You know, Mike, I agree with you because I didn't feel like there was a lot of bad shots taken. They just missed a lot of shots they normally make. And even that last shot, the play was a terrific call by Konzo Martin. A wide open three from the guy that's been your best player and your leading scorer and first team all conference. He just missed the shot. It was a terrific play call and an excellent look to win the game. And for me, Kevin Puryear playing 10 minutes, Tillman playing 17 minutes, that forced Porter Jr. to have to play more and probably take more shots. And I thought it was interesting to hear Konzo Martin talking after the game, and he said, well, now we have a better idea of what Mike can do and can't do right now. Clearly his explosion's not there. They wanted to win in St. Louis, but now they get a full week to prepare for the NCAA tournament. They're going to the tournament, and that's where the real run that they want, that's where the success will be judged, what they do in the NCAA tournament. And sure, I wanted to see him play Kentucky today, but I think having Porter out there yesterday, it gives them a better idea of how he could fit, and they'll be a better team for it when they hit the floor maybe a week from today. What do you think?
Well, you know, I agree with a lot of what you said, that, you know, that this does give them time and that sort of thing, but I don't necessarily concur that that's where the success will be judged. I mean, if there's a Missouri fan out there that doesn't think this season has already been successful, that person has issues.
No, that's right.
I mean, this season is a smashing success at this point. A year ago, 2 years ago, I mean, my goodness, you were barely Division I, and now you're in the tournament. You were over 500 in a conference that you had begun to wonder, you know, that, or you had reason to wonder whether you could fit into it. It's been a bonanza. Now, if you had said this at the start of the season, you're going to go 20-12 entering the tournament, 10-8. Maybe you'd think, well, why can't we do better than that? We got, you know, a top five pick. Well, you had him for 2 minutes, now 25 minutes total. So that's why you're not better than this. But in his absence, this season has been a smash, and anything that happens a week from now or beyond is an absolute added bonus. And it may happen because, you know, you do have a top five pick on your team, and you do have a, you know, a core group that won more than 50% of its conference games and that defends really well for the most part when they're not fouling. So I don't see how this season isn't already just a bonanza for Missouri and going forward. And, you know, the other thing you discovered in a player like Jonte, a guy who can, you know, when Michael inevitably goes to the draft after this, Jonte can be somebody that you build around for his sophomore year.
And I totally agree with you. It has been a terrific success. And Konzo Martin, I thought, has done a fantastic job. And recruiting for next year looks terrific. I was just saying next week's tournament's more important than this SEC tournament.
Oh, yes, I totally agree with that. You know, the reason yesterday was important to win was so you could get to today so that you can get more time.
Right.
And, you know, how much better can we be if we, you know, get more competition with Mike on the floor? That's what this was about. And if you could extend it beyond that, you know, you could win a championship, perhaps. And, you know, you only get, like, four chances as a college basketball team to celebrate, to raise a trophy. You know, you get your in-season tournament, your Maui or whatever, you get this, and then you get the regular season and this, and then I suppose if you get to the Final Four, you can throw an extra added celebration into it, but it doesn't really last very long. So, you know, I mean, like, there's only so many chances, and this was one that you had, and you look at the field, and there's nobody that scares you to the point where you couldn't have won. So it is a little bit of a disappointment to let that one get away to a team that probably won't be in the NCAAs. But isn't terrible. So, you know, I think there's a little disappointment in that end. But overall, you know, what happened yesterday was a positive step because you got him out on the floor. You got him into the flow enough that he was able to take 17 shots. You'd like to see him, you know, get to the free throw line a little bit. You'd like to maybe not miss the dozen shots. But overall, I mean, I think that yesterday was definitely a step forward.
We are on the same page, Mike DeCourcy. Now let's talk about the Sunflower Showdown Part 3 that will be here in Kansas City tonight at 6 o'clock. Kansas beats Oklahoma State without Azubuike, who's suffering that from that knee injury right now. And Kansas State beats TCU in overtime. Let's start with Kansas. They had lost to Oklahoma State twice. Didn't look good considering Doak was out with his sprained MCL, missing the Big 12 tournament. But Kansas comes back, and they beat Oklahoma State. How do you think Kansas played yesterday, considering Azubuike was out, and a lot of people felt like maybe they were going to lose to Oklahoma State again?
Yeah, I thought they were amazing to be able to do that, to be able to just own the game. I mean, it's close at half, and then they just basically blew it open. Terrific performance, especially without Doak. To get you know, a combined 30 out minutes from Mitch Lightfoot and DeSosa. DeSosa starting to maybe contribute a little bit. He had 8 rebounds yesterday. That's a great step forward for him. You know, obviously the problem that you have is without Doak, you're a little bit more oriented to playing a certain way, and it becomes a lot more perimeter-oriented, so it's harder to sustain that. Plus, right now, you're really loading the minutes onto your regulars. You don't want to lose to your rival, but given the nature of this tournament, this postseason tournament, I mean, Kansas could win it. It's going to be hard because, again, they are short on guys. But there's nobody out there, and I say this about a lot of teams, so they don't have to be overly flattered by it. But there's a lot of there's no one out there that Kansas is going to look at and say we got no shot against them, or it's going to be way harder than it ought to be, or whatever. This is the nature of this season is there's nobody that's intimidating to probably just about half the field. You want to be ready as possible for that. And I'm not sure that you need Devontae to be playing 39 minutes 3 days in a row as you prepare for what's the bigger tournament. You've already won the regular season. If you could find a way to scale it back today, maybe, I think that might suit you in the long run.
I'm curious what you think the selection committee does about Doak when they're saying they hope to have him back next week, but we don't know how quickly he'll respond from this. Do they factor in a short-term injury like that at all, or is that just if it's like they know a guy's out, they factor it in?
Well, you know, that's a question now. I mean, ever since Cincinnati acknowledged the truth in 2000 and got hosed as a result, I mean, it was one of the committee's poorer decisions to take their number one seed away. because they, you know, they were the number one team in the country. They lost one game. I think that was their third loss of the season. And there was no one really that had earned to knock them off the top line, but they got knocked out because Kenyon Martin wasn't available.
Right.
So now that, you know, that's encouraged teams to be dishonest about it, or to be obfuscate, to do that instead. And I think we saw that with Syracuse. I think Arinze Anawaku, maybe one of their guys. I think it was Arinze that they just said, you know, we're not sure. I mean, we'll get back to you. And then I don't blame him for that, because the committee can't be trusted based on what they did to Cincinnati that year. So, you know, I don't know what is up with Doak, and I really hope he has more games left in him. But I understand why schools at this point, when they get a late season injury, they say, you know, day to day or whatever, because the committee set a terrible precedent 18 years ago, and you know, that's where we are now.
So, Mike, you wrote a column that is about Pittsburgh and the disaster of Kevin Stallings, going 0-19, and the fact that Jamie Dixon is here in the Big 12 now and winning at his alma mater because of it. And you said, you know, this could be a lesson for schools like TCU, Baylor, Texas Tech, and others. And I got to be honest with you, I felt like this could have been written right to K-State fans. Because we've been having a lot of conversations, really ever since Bruce Weber got hired, but even now that it looks like K-State's going back to the tournament for a second year in a row, we hear from a lot of K-State fans that are still dissatisfied with Bruce Weber. And, I feel like this column that you wrote, which is be careful what you wish for, right? Bruce Weber.
Well, let me say this. It wasn't mine.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That was by Mac Engel from Fort Worth.
You retweeted it, maybe.
I retweeted it, yes.
Okay.
I'd love to take credit for that, but it was Mac's work. I thought it was an important thing to say. When you look at the disaster that Pitt has become, that you need to learn a lesson from that, and I agree with him very much on that. The way they handled Jamie at the end of his tenure was disastrous. They didn't fire him, but they allowed a pro-oriented media to assert that he had been underperforming and to create an atmosphere in which he was underperforming. And what a good athletic director would have done was called Jamie in and said, you know, we can do a little better than you're recruiting right now. How can we make that happen? You know, what do we need? Do you maybe need to rethink some of your staff? How do we do that? But in the meantime, here's a lifetime contract. And by the way, we're going to build a statue of you. Maybe not a literal one, but you know what I mean. That's what they should have done. Instead, they reduced his buyout, let him walk, and then they hired a guy who went 0-19 against ACC teams 2 years later. That's what a not good athletic director does. And so that you have to be vigilant to make sure that you're not making, foolish maneuvers like that. Now, look, I understand K-State fans are disappointed or upset that the prior athletic director basically opened the same door for Frank Martin that Jamie Dixon was allowed to walk out. I understand that, but I don't know what K-State fans believe their program ought to be that is so much grander than what they have. Their history is not a lot better. And if they're, you know, if they think there's a bar out there that they're not quite reaching, you could say that perhaps that bar's a little higher, but look at who are basically your peers in the conference. K-State's historic peers in the conference are Oak State and Iowa State. I mean, those are the teams that have done similar things to K-State in the last quarter century to 35 years. I know that when Jack Hartman was there, they had a couple better runs, and when Tex Winter was there, that they had a Final Four. That was a long time ago. I mean, you're not been that team for a long time. I'll give you, I've told this story, I'm sure, maybe before, but when Frank got hired, And Jason Whitlock really, you know, took it to task, the hiring. And so I read Jason's column, and like, it hit me. You know, Jason's right. This is a disgrace to the tradition of K-State basketball, because the tradition they'd spent 20 years building was they were a 500 team. And so I did the math, and for the 20 years prior to Frank's hiring, they were a little 500 team. I mean, their record was like, their average record was like 14-14. I mean, so now, so then when Frank read that, he saw the word disgrace, and he thought I was, he didn't quite get that I was, you know, being facetious, so he got mad at me. But anyway, the point is that your recent history is not a lot beyond this. You know, if you everybody wants to, you know, make the Elite Eight or go to the Final Four or whatever, but most of your last 30 years has been below average, average or below average. You had a peak when you had Frank. I totally agree that was not well handled. But this team right now, they're exciting to watch. They play good basketball. You got really good players like Dean Wade and Barry Brown. You got a really good young player like Cartier Diarra. I don't know what there's a lot to complain about.
Mike DeCourcy is our guest. So, Mike, what do you expect from this matchup between Kansas and Kansas State tonight?
Well, that's a great question. And because, you know, we've only seen Kansas without Azubuike once or twice, and periodically, you know, in every game when he takes a break. But 40-minute-wise, you know, I think the one thing I will say is that although it takes away the pressure on the Kansas State interior to have to defend Azubuike and what, you know, the incredible physical power and the wear and tear, you know, especially second game in two nights, you know, Mitch Lightfoot's probably better designed to guard Dean Wade, because you got to get out on the floor, you got to be able to, you know, stay with him off the, you know, off the high screen. You have to, you know, be able to stay in the play and not allow him to get away from you on the pick and pop and that sort of stuff. So in some ways, you know, KU is probably a little bit better aligned to defend the key options for K-State with this group. But they lose a little bit on offense, and they lose that ability to wear on K-State. K-State did not play well yesterday. I mean, they should have lost. They should have been buried in the first half. TCU really screwed that up. By not, you know, when Barry was, like, he had 2 points through the first 25 minutes, you should be, you know, at that point, you've got to be double digits up and, you know, close to free and clear. And instead, you're in a 6 or 8 point game. You're allowing K-State life. I think the K-State has better basketball in them than they showed yesterday in their overtime win. The question is whether they can get it out of themselves when they, you know, when you've had to play 45 and you don't have a lot of rest. I guess the advantage in that regard is that, you know, KU doesn't play its bench very much, and so those guys might be worn as well. The matchups this year have both been where, you know, the one was really good, the one at Allen. The other one was, you know, one-sided, and we talked at the time about how poor the performance was. You know, I think that KU has, you know, I think that, you know, KU needs to deliver a good performance here because they don't really have any good excuses to not. I mean, their bad performance was yesterday, and they still won in overtime. So, you know, it'd be a good day to play some good hoops.
What's your reaction when a team is up three and they have a chance to foul and they don't at the end of the game?
Oh, I think you should always foul.
Right.
As long as you're not, like, you know, fouling a guy when he's heaving the ball or whatever, but, you know, I think you absolutely should always foul. I went through it. I saw Ken Pomeroy did a study on that one time. I didn't think that it added up, because, you know, I did a similar one. Now, he's a much better statistician than I am. But in going over a period of time, you know, I didn't do a status. I reported on one done by Steve Finnemore, who is a high school coach in Michigan, who used to be a college assistant coach at St. Peter's and was a staff member, low-level staff member at Michigan State for a while. And he did it. And his readout showed that there was no question that fouling was the better option. You take, you add in the very, very, very minor chance that you could lose in regulation, but you take out the very, very high possibility that you could, that you're going to lose in overtime the other way. You basically turn what is a, what is maybe a 50-50 shot that you're going to wind up in overtime, and then a 50-50 shot that you're going to lose once you're there, into a, like a 1 in 10,000 chance or whatever it is that that you're going to, that you're going to get tied or lose in regulation on the free throw deal. I wouldn't do it before five, and I've seen coaches now who do it before five. I still think that's risky because you start to add in more potential to mess it up. But once you're below five, I think you always should. And the reason for that is, defensive habits. Like a great example. It's not the same concept, but defensive habits can be used against you at the end of games. Mario Chalmers makes that shot, right? Where's Memphis' defense? They're in the lane. Why are they guarding the lane? Nothing bad can happen to them there. But that's where they are because that's where they always are. And so they lose. They get tied in regulation and they lose. The decision by the Louisville player last week to challenge the late three by Virginia, they were up 4 points. Those 3 points can't hurt you. They just changed the final score. You go over and challenge, you foul him, now you can lose. So those are things that are habitual, that players have drilled into them. You need to take them out of their habits at the end of a game like that when you have a three-point lead. And fouling takes them out of their habits.
Mike, I want to ask you a question about bracketology as I'm looking at both Joe Lenardi and Jerry Palm's latest bracketology, and they still have the Oklahoma Sooners in the tournament, and they don't have Oklahoma State in the tournament. And I know that the selection committee doesn't necessarily care how you're playing in February and going into March compared to how you played in December. But man, around here, we watch these games. Oklahoma looks terrible. They look terrible. You've talked about it. They don't guard anybody.
They don't play.
They don't play.
What they are doing right now is basically not basketball.
Right.
It's not like they're playing well and getting the hard luck. They've basically stopped playing. It's not a happy thing because, they were really fun when Trey was playing great. They were really fun. But I would still look at it and say that the answer is not in how you're playing. I mean, we've seen in other sports, sometimes you get into a playoff situation where you're playing terribly, but you've earned that playoff spot. And I have not broken down, the wins and the losses, the quad one and all that for those two teams. But I'm not thinking Oak State is a tournament team right now. They have the sweep of KU in the regular season, but I don't think there's enough there to say that that's automatically in. I haven't split the hairs on it like those guys have, and so they have a better handle on it. I can't go on what Oklahoma's done in the last month. I can tell you what they've done, which, like I said, is they've basically given up playing the game. I mean, they don't fight for the space on the court. They don't work their offense. They don't play together, and they don't, like you said, they don't defend at all. And so they're not a good team right now. But if their record says that they're a tournament team, then they are. I'm just not sure whether it says that at this point. I'd have to really look closely. One thing I will say, I was asked yesterday, does having Trey on their team, get them a pass or a tiebreaker or whatever? And I will say that I think we should put that to rest after Steph Curry was left out in 2009, Steph Curry and Davidson, because, as you guys well know, as well as anybody, you know, what Steph did was the most magical thing in recent NCAA tournament history. And a year later, they were still really good. Then they lost the Southern Conference tournament, and they said, sorry. Committee said, nope, not in. So for that reason, I don't think that they should get a pass over Trey. I don't think that they should get, you know, penalized for their recent play. But just like Oak State, I'm not sure whether at this point they're a tournament team, you know, just because they, you know, had a few good days. I think you have to look at the whole package, compare it to everybody else. You know, I look at the way, you know, I'm not an eye test guy. In fact, I believe that it should be not a factor at all. But if you do compare, say, Oklahoma with Nebraska, those old rivals, you know, Nebraska is a, if you played them on a neutral court right now, you know, my money would be on the Huskers.
Right. I guess, and the reason I compare them to Oklahoma State is because we watch both of those teams.
Right.
And so we've seen them up close and in person. I'm not going to be outraged at any bubble team that doesn't get in, because you're on the bubble for a reason. You know, you could have done more through the course of the year to put yourself in a more solid position. I'm just more looking at it like, if you're Oklahoma's the last four in, that means that there is a hair's difference between all these other teams. And I mean,
right.
Mike, we watched, this is Big 12 tournament. This is, okay, Oklahoma knows they're on the bubble. If they're motivated at all, they'll come out and give it a really good go, because they need to win to really make sure they're in the tournament. And they looked, like you said, they still didn't play basketball. And it just,
right.
It kind of sickens me to think that team would be in the tournament because of what you said. I mean, like, what are we rewarding at this point? Because that team looks completely done. Just done.
Yeah, they do. They do. You know, it's, that's, you know, that's why the tournament, though, you know, should look at the entire season, because, you know, we have seen stranger things than a team like that is basically, hey, Konzo Martin's 2014 team. They not only had a mediocre season and were, you know, they probably earned their first four bid, but it, you know, everybody that gets in the first four is somewhat fortunate that they weren't left on the other side of that line, because that line is like the wall in Game of Thrones, right? I mean, the difference between being on the one side and the other is incredibly enormous. So you're somewhat fortunate, and then they were buried in that game against Iowa. And they wind up in the Sweet 16. So we have seen teams, you know, come back to life in that game and then go on and do something special. So you can't rule it out, and that's why you have to look at the breadth of the season. And I'll tell you guys, statistically, and one of the reasons that I believe they don't have that recency in there any longer is because I campaigned for about 5 years and kept showing year after year, the stats don't back this up. The stats say it doesn't matter, you know, how you're playing in your last 10 relative to what you'll do in the tournament. Now, it can matter in certain circumstances, and this sure looks like it'll be one if they make it. But in general, there are lots of reasons that go into why you might underperform over that period. Schedule. You know, maybe somebody's a little nicked up, needs a week of break. You know, the fact that you're playing strictly within your conference at that point, and everybody in your league knows you so well, especially in a double round robin league. And then what do? When you get you in the tournament, the first thing we do is say you don't have to play your people anymore. You're done with that. You're going, now you get to play the rest of the country. Rest of the country doesn't know exactly how to guard you. They may have a general idea, should have a general idea from scouting, but they don't know the specifics, the intricacies. They haven't done it before. Their guys haven't done it before. So that often provides new life. I wouldn't bet a lot on, not that I would gamble on college hoops, but I wouldn't bet a lot on Oklahoma if they get in doing well. But it could happen.
Mike, final question. It's K-State and Kansas tonight, followed by West Virginia and Texas Tech. Who do you think will be in the final tomorrow?
Well, you know, I'm excited about that group, right? Because you want to have people in there that are definitely going to the postseason and a chance to enhance their seed, and a chance, like I said, to raise a title. You know, I didn't like the way West Virginia played down the stretch, and there were things I didn't like about what I saw yesterday, but eventually they got it together and played really well and were able to beat Baylor. But Texas Tech, I think, you know, I think they match up well in that game. And I would put, like, all picks at this point this year are very close. But I, so I would go with Texas Tech. And, you know, KU was so good yesterday and so good the last time they played the Wildcats that I'm going to have to see K-State step forward past that before I would pick them. So definitely I'm going to go with the KU-Texas Tech final.
Mike, thank you so much for the time. We appreciate it. We will talk to you again very soon.
Always a pleasure, guys. Thanks.
That is Mike DeCourcy, one of the very best in the business, very generous with his time, as we talked about a whole lot, everything that happened yesterday and what's happening tonight. Again, 6 o'clock, it's Kansas State and Kansas right here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. And then we've got West Virginia and Texas Tech as the nightcap at Sprint Center. Come out and celebrate with us. We'll be on stage early in the afternoon, getting you ready for all the action tonight with the Miller Lite Fan Fest presented by Sports Radio 810 WHB.